Hi, ladies and gentlemen. This is Joe Szymanski with Elections Daily, and today I am very excited to be here with the Democrats nominee for the very competitive Nebraska 2nd District, Kara Eastman. Kara, thank you for coming on with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so first question, the easy one. Let's go with the easy one first. What inspired you to run for Congress?
Well, in 2016, my mother was diagnosed with cancer for the fifth time and prescribed a $2,500 pill that she could not afford to take. And it sent me down this pathway of thinking about and talking about healthcare and prescription costs. And I've worked in nonprofit for over 20 years and have talked to a lot of families who are in a similar situation to my mom of having to choose between life-saving, life-altering medication and just really felt like we needed a new system. And in researching, talking to people and for the last few years and running for Congress, I've just come to see that the problem is corporate greed, that we could have a better system. We just need the political will to change it.
Okay. So I guess we need to kind of continue down the path of healthcare in a certain way. Obviously, right now, we are in the worst pandemic worldwide that we have seen in a century. So how has COVID-19 and the pandemic affected how you've run your campaign?
Well, we've always run a very strong grassroots campaign, and in 2018 we knocked on 200,000 doors in our district, and luckily we were able to make a full pass at the district at the doors before the coronavirus hit. So that was in March, and I have an incredible team, an amazing field director who immediately reconfigured our campaign so that we were able to utilize technology to make a lot more phone calls, do a lot more things digitally. And so it's been a challenge in some ways because I have organizers and canvassers, and for myself, we love knocking on doors. We love going out and talking to voters. But actually, it's been interesting in some ways, maybe even having deeper conversations with people on the phone or by Zoom meetings. And so we feel like it's been challenging in some ways, and then in other ways, we've learned a lot about newer ways that we can do things.
Okay. So to go back to your campaign, this year for your primary, you overwhelmingly won the Democratic primary this year for your seat after you had a very narrow win in 2018. What changes, if you made any, did you have to get that result?
Well, we learned a lot in 2018. I think that's one of the things about doing this is you learn. And I feel like we are better at how we strategize. We had data to go off of. My name recognition was higher. All of those things certainly helped. But I think that what we're finding is that the message of our campaign of running as a Democrat who wants to actually get things done for the district, who's willing to compromise to get things done, but that doesn't mean compromise my values. That means actually find solutions to problems with people who might not agree with you on everything. I think those things are really resonating with people. And in our outreach, we've just expanded our universe. We're reaching out. We knocked doors of independents in the beginning, asking them about the things that they cared about the most. And interestingly enough, they told us their two priorities are getting Trump out of office and expanding healthcare. So we feel like the message of the campaign is just resonating more and more with people.
Okay. So to kind of keep along the same tracks of this, you lost this same race in the general against Don Bacon in 2018. What makes you believe you can get a different result this year in what might be a harder atmosphere for you to get a win?
Well, a few things. One, first of all, I wouldn't say it's the same race. I mean, it's a very different year with Trump actually being on the ballot this time. And I think things have changed. The Democratic Party in many ways has expanded to be able to show people that Democrats actually do care about the things that people are talking about. That, you know, if I look at my platform, you know, over 90% of Americans agree that we need universal background checks for gun sales. Over 70% of Democrats believe we need an expanded universal healthcare system. Most people agree that people should have a livable wage. And amidst the pandemic, I've had a lot of people reach out to me saying, you know, I've lost my health care now because I lost my job. And that's scary. And I didn't realize how coupling those two things was so dangerous. But I think also when we look at data, I am currently ahead in the polls. The district has recently been upgraded from lean Republican to toss-up. And Biden is ahead in the district. So we feel confident, never complacent, but confident that we can pull off a win this time.
Okay. So you obviously, like you said, you're confident. Your fundraising does show that. Your fundraising has continued to be impressive for any type of Democrat in Nebraska in general. But how much has the support for your campaigns surprised you over these last 2 years?
It's always really humbling. I mean, we have done, as you said, very well with fundraising. We were one of the top fundraisers in the country this last quarter. And I think it just shows that people are looking for authentic leadership, for somebody to take the lead like that in a state, a red state like Nebraska. Although we have been a blue dot here in the second district when we gave an electoral college vote to Obama in 2008, but that people are looking for somebody who's actually going to represent them over the needs of large corporations and the very wealthy. And I think the Republican tax bill really soured people on the way that Republicans treat working Americans.
Okay. So going back to your last race, last cycle, I believe you did not get DCCC support, but this cycle you have. How much help has that support been in getting over the edge to leading in this campaign?
Sure. Well, to be clear, last cycle in 2018, I was on the DCCC's red to blue list. So we did have some support from them. But in the end, they didn't end up supporting me as much as they supported other candidates. That has changed. Mm-hmm. And they are 100% behind me this time. We have their full support. And frankly, they apologized for last time, saying that if they know that if they had helped me, I would have won. So I feel like that's amazing. And we're just really grateful for their help and their support. There are a lot of other groups out there that have been incredible to us as well. Groups like End Citizens United, who actually care about saving democracy. Groups like the Progressive Change Campaign Committee have been incredible. So I'm really grateful for all the help from outside groups that we have and from local groups in and around the district. So it's just very humbling.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned your campaign. You are running a very progressive or at least a progressive campaign in a district that many see as a swing, if not a tilt Republican leaning district. Do you think your message will render you unable to get maybe that last 1% of swing voters that you might need to get over the line in a district like Nebraska Second?
Well, I think when we look at the district, so let's look at the data, right? The Republican advantage in voter registration has shrunk considerably, where now it's about 50-50, and a quarter of the district are registered independents. As I mentioned, we started our campaign this time by knocking doors of independents, and as a result, in the primary, we saw that independents requested Democratic ballots for early voting 2-1 over Republican ones. When we look at the vast majority of elected political positions in the district, the vast majority are Democrats. So I think, and this is a very diverse district. You know, we are over 20% Latino, African Americans, South Sudanese. We have a large refugee population. So the district has changed. The demographics have changed. And the fact that the district is now rated toss-up, I think, shows just how sort of, that this district is not necessarily more Republican or more conservative leaning. And what we're finding is that people are looking for someone to represent them and that they're tired of the corporate influence that that exists over politicians. They're tired of a tax bill that wasn't for them. It was actually just to give handouts to the very wealthy. And they're worried about losing health care or drowning in prescription costs. So I'm really proud to be in that area where I can actually go out and speak to people about the issues that they care about, and finding that that message is really resonating with people.
Okay. So to continue in on that, there have been multiple Nebraska Democrats or Democratic aligned politicians in Nebraska who have endorsed your opponent, Don Bacon. Do you have a message to them about bucking the party to support your opponent?
Well, let's start. I mean, you know, I have been endorsed by dozens of Nebraska Democrats. My opponent was endorsed by someone who ran as a Democrat. He was a Republican and then ran as a Democrat for governor. So I would push against the idea that he's been endorsed by a lot. and what we're finding, though, is that the more that we go out and talk to people, the more that people get to know me and hear my message from me, and rather than hearing it from the Republican machine that has been attacking me since 2008, continues to, because they are so scared of losing this seat, that they do want to support me because they know that I'm the best candidate for this district.
Okay. On your issues page, on your website, you've stated that you will help to end gerrymandering. What do you think is the best way for Congress to do this, or do you think it needs to come down to the states to decide on how to end gerrymandering?
Yeah, so this issue of redistricting and the way that it is traditionally done, we've been impacted by that adversely in our own district, where the district was gerrymandered in 2010 by the Republicans to serve them. And this is something that voters are really frustrated with, that they feel like their vote doesn't count. They feel like whatever political party is in charge just kind of sways things to their side. And this is where it's time for politicians to say, this should not be a partisan issue. This is a fundamental threat to our democracy. And we need to have third party independent bodies involved in redistricting so that it doesn't benefit one political party over the other.
Okay. To kind of keep on this question, are you concerned personally that if you win, but the issue of gerrymandering is not resolved in these next 2 years, that you yourself could possibly be drawn out into a much heavier Republican district than the one you are currently running in right now?
Of course. I mean, that is an obvious, clear concern. And again, it's such a shame that politicians have let this issue go so far, because it really does undermine American democracy.
Okay. In 2018, you were very popular in, I guess, progressive circles for very much publicizing your support for Medicare for All in a swing district. But you do not explicitly state support for it on your website this cycle. I might have misread, but do you still support a Medicare for All system, or have your views on that changed at all?
No, my views have not changed. As I mentioned, you know, I don't believe in compromising on your values, but I think what's really important right now is that Congressman Bacon, my opponent, recently voted against lowering prescription costs. He voted against protecting those with pre-existing conditions. And in the middle of a pandemic, voted against expanding the Affordable Care Act. So the voters of our district have a clear choice. They can support somebody who, like them, supports expanding health care. The voters in Nebraska voted for Medicaid expansion in 2018. Our governor is finally now getting around to allowing that to happen 2 years later, which is completely immoral. But they have a choice. And my opponent, his first line of action when he got into Congress was to say not just that he would vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act, but said he's voting hell yes to take away the health care from millions of Americans. hundreds of Americans, hundreds of thousands of Nebraskans. That was the first thing that he decided to do at a time where people are drowning in healthcare costs. People are unable to afford their prescriptions, and where we know that there's so much waste in our current healthcare system, administrative waste, and that there's a more effective, efficient system out there where the federal government could save money, because the bill that I have been publicly in support of, H.R. 1384, has been proven to actually save the federal government trillions of dollars over a decade. We right now spend 18% of our GDP on healthcare. We're projected to spend 24%. That was before the pandemic. We know how many people have lost healthcare because they've lost their jobs, and people are struggling right now and need a better system. And I think where we have such a broken healthcare system, it's time to get somebody in this office who actually wants to roll up her sleeves and help fix our healthcare system.
Okay. You mentioned, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic again. What do you think America needs to do to rebuild the economy in the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, first, I think it's such a shame that the leadership in this country has been so remiss on this, because we could have prevented the economic collapse that we're seeing. And obviously, we all want businesses to reopen. We want the schools to be open so our kids can go to school. I mean, of course we want these things. I don't want any small businesses in my district to have to close like they have. I don't want people to be evicted. I don't want landlords to miss out on their rent. But we have to do things safely and securely, because there are continued spikes of COVID around the country, and we don't have control over this. And right now I'm particularly concerned about the reopening that we've experienced in our state and in our district, and the potential for lives being endangered as a result. So we need more testing. We need universal testing. We need contact tracing. We need mask requirements. Like, these are easy things that could be done, but unfortunately the leaders right now, especially at the highest level of leadership in this country, have acted like this is just not a big deal when it is such a huge deal.
Okay. So we'll go into one final question here. If you end up running your race, what is your day one issue to get done for the citizens you represent?
I want to work on healthcare. We are going to need Congress to take significant action to make sure that people who are traditionally left behind, so that's people of color, people living in poverty, younger people, people who are, you know, who have disabilities, and people who are older, are safe, healthy, and protected during the coronavirus. We're going to need action with our economy so that it doesn't tank anymore. There's just so much around the pandemic that's going to need to be done. But I'm going to Congress because I want to work on healthcare. I'm going to Congress because I think we need money out of politics. It's why I don't take corporate PAC money in my campaign. We need people who represent people over the needs of special interests and large corporations.
Okay. Well, Kara Eastman, thank you very much for coming on to speak with me today. It was a pleasure. Thank you again for taking time out of your day. Folks, this has been Joe Szymanski with Elections Daily. Thank you again for listening in. Kara, thank you very much again for coming on with me today.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.